Welcome to the Speak As Well As You Think podcast, brought to you by Vautier Communications. I'm your host, Jen Alex, and the goal of this show is to uncover communication strategies and behaviors that you can use to improve the way that you show up and perform at work. We'll talk about what effective communication looks like in action so that you can apply it to your own career. If you'd like a written summary of each episode, subscribe to our weekly email newsletter by visiting vautiercommunications.com. Welcome back to our last episode of the year on the Speak As Well As You Think podcast. And today's topic is going to be around staying concise and on message. With the holidays coming, both with work gatherings that you might have and personal holiday parties, I think that this is a great topic because you'll have lots of chit-chatting and conversations that you'll be going into. And one of the hardest things at some of these events is trying not to walk away from somebody that's rambling or going on too long, and you start to lose interest. When we think about being brief or being concise and staying on message, I really love going back to Joseph McCormick's book, Brief. And in the first chapter, he opens by saying, "You cannot afford to miss the boat on brevity. It's the difference between success and failure. And if you think you've already got it covered, you're probably wrong." So it's a really good way of testing yourself multiple times. And that's something that we'll talk about within the episode here. But let's start with what some of the common pitfalls are when it comes to people that aren't concise or can't stay on message.
Yeah, Jen, I'll take it from here to start. I would say the biggest issue right now in communication, both personally and professionally, not reading the audience.
Yeah.
But a part of that is because we don't read our audience, that's where we tend to ramble, use language that isn't common or simple for the audience that we're interacting with, over-explain certain items that to some audiences don't need an over-explanation. They're already well-versed in that space. But I think a lot of that just stems from not knowing who your listeners would be. And if we don't know who our listeners are, it's that whole idea of start with the end in mind. If I don't know where I'm going with my message, that's what tends to have me wander. And a 10-minute talk can take 30 minutes before you know it because you're going in different directions. You're constantly feeling as though, okay, I think I said this, but let me say it a slightly different way to see if it's easier to understand.
Yep.
All of a sudden, we get that battle that you've heard us talk about on several of these podcasts, that confusion of more being better.
Mm-hmm.
A longer message, a longer meeting, a longer email doesn't mean a better message, a better meeting, a better email. It's just taken more time to get the point across. And some of this can be an indication of nerves, but again, I believe that stems from not knowing who your audience is. Some of it can be of lack of preparation. We have so much content flowing around upstairs that we're not exactly clear on how we want to get that out. And what we've got going on in our minds and then trying to get that out of the mouth, if we don't have a plan or a prep period for that, it doesn't come out smooth. And I believe our listeners can connect on that, resonate with that, again, from the personal and professional setting as we've worked our ways through life and communication in the past.
Yeah. And I think you talked about the not using simple language. You can call it industry jargon, business speak, whatever you might clump that into. A lot of people think that bigger words or bigger terms make you sound smarter or come across as more of an expert in your space. And all it does is just confuse people. One of the things we recommend is speaking in simple language. And it doesn't mean dumbing it down, but it means being able to speak about it conversationally. If somebody is aware of that field or understands that project and the nuances of it, then you guys can start to go into some more of that complex language and really get into the nitty-gritty. But chances are that person is equally as interested in talking about it. But if you go too deep or too nuanced to begin with, that's where people typically just close their ears and they're looking around for other things to grab their attention, or you get a lot of the, wow, cool. And then it doesn't go anywhere from there.
Yeah. And I want to highlight one more thing, Jen. You just brought up a book, but I've got one here. It's called Simply Said. It's by Jay Sullivan. And in his very first chapter, he's got this study here about using simple language. And I'll just read a snippet. He says, "Sophisticated professionals fall into two traps. First, we try to show how smart we are. Mm-hmm. Second, we fail to recognize our industry jargon. Big words do not impress anyone. Big ideas do." And he said his company surveyed more than 1,800 business professionals. asking what impresses them about other people's communication skills. When asked to rank the top three communication skills from a list of dozens of items, not a single person ranked using sophisticated vocabulary as a top three choice. In a professional setting, you're not graded on smarts. People assume you are smart. You're graded on having impact. Yeah. That means getting people to take action based on your ideas. And that's that whole idea of, can you hit your target? If you don't know where your target is, it's going to be a mess trying to accomplish that task.
Yeah. And it's something I say to all of my courses is that our authenticity is what sounds professional. It's not us changing our verbiage, changing what we're saying that increases what our audience is saying is more professional or more understood. On the other side of the eight ball, from what both of you have touched on there, I also think that stepping away from rambling, we also have to look at understanding our audience, because that's what we say sometimes opens up the can of worms, where we start off in one place, and because it's not the right audience for it, or we don't know how to say it to them, we end up in a totally different place from where we're supposed to be. Whether it's the questions that we're getting, where that conversation leads to, or the different steps that we take from step one. Again, that's not necessarily what we're looking for. So, John, to your point, understanding who we have in front of us, what their understanding of our content is, their knowledge level, what they like to see. Not only is it going to help to keep them in the room, so to say, where we're saying keep them interested and make sure that they're still listening, but for those people that are going to listen anyways, making sure that the questions they're asking and what they're diving deeper on is actually relevant to what we're initially trying to bring up or get through, instead of it just being 10, 15, 20 minutes of conversation that's not actually useful to either party.
Yeah. And I think stemming from that, Matt, once you understand the audience, it's figuring out what you want to say. And ideally not in the moment. Sometimes, you know, at holiday parties and things where you're not necessarily going to plan out, here's what I'm going to say to this guy if I meet him at the party or anything like that. So some of it is spur of the moment, but think about it through the lens of, what is my one key message?
Yeah.
Start there and then expand based on what people, what questions you get back, what they seem interested in, you know, what they really lit up in terms of their nonverbal body language when you touched on, and you can go a little bit deeper in those places. But it's not trying to have all of this information that I need to share with you and that I think is vital. I need to pick what is the most important thing I need to share, and then I can expand greater from there.
I call it the lowest hanging fruit test. What's the easiest thing you can accomplish with the audience that you have, given the information you're trying to provide?
Yeah.
But pick that low-hanging fruit. You can always reach for higher fruit after or later, or depending on how the interaction goes. But having a simple win to begin with builds confidence for you. It also helps the audience understand, this is John's point. This is where he or she is going with the message. And then they can start to guide their listening ears in that mindset as well.
And we may have other things to say, other sub-messages, other small pieces, but as Jen phrased it, some of these shorter interactions, whether it's around that table, around the holidays, talking to those family members, or whether it's as we're recounting what happened on the holidays as we come back into the office, that may not be the time for my 30-minute version.
Yeah.
We have what we call the 33-30 rule, where we have a 30-second version, a 3-minute version, and a 30-minute version. We've got to find which version that audience is actually looking for. We don't want to give the 30-minute version to our 3-minute audience, because likely now they've got way too much. They don't know what to do with it, or they have too many key messages and they're not sure what relates where. For us, sometimes it's easier to say, this is my main piece, and to work with it. We've all read an email or been in a conversation before where we read the first line and we say, okay, that's what I'm setting myself up for. And then we finish that conversation or email and say, wait, hold on. None of that had to do with itself.
Yep.
And that's not necessarily where we want to be on the takeaway.
Yeah. And I think that leads to a structure or a format. And if you've worked with us before, you know that at Vautier Communications, we are huge fans of any type of format that you can find for organizing information. And the reason for that is because it helps you be clear and concise and have that repeatable process that you just drop information into each and every time you have a viewpoint or an opinion. You have an update you have to provide, a pitch or an ask that you have. But if there's some structure or format that you can use for some of these conversations and that you have the ability to expand, as Matt mentioned, maybe into your 3 minute or 30 minute version from the short, concise 30 second version, that allows you to be flexible based on what we need to go through, how long other conversations take, what the audience looks like they're interested in hearing about or going into more. So being able to rely on those is super helpful.
And we call it the recipe-based approach on purpose. The analogy recipe is a great one to use there. People like structure. People like order. People can generally, for the most part, follow instructions. And so giving guidance on that and say, here's my topic. Here's my point of view. Here's why I feel the way I feel. And then if I like wrapping it up, I can do so. But give me that structure and let me use it and follow it and start to apply it in everyday life. We talk about it in our programs. The whole viewpoint technique, which is what I just highlighted there, is something we're already doing. For many of us, it's unknowingly doing in just daily conversation with spouses, with kids, with friends, with family members. We obviously do it in the workplace, but it's nice to have that recipe-based approach because this way you know when you want to make that banana bread that you've made for all those years, and every time you make it that way, it turns out great. It takes a lot of the guesswork out. You go to your kitchen, you grab the recipe, you follow the instructions, you make sure you've got the ingredients, and 45 minutes later, you've got whatever you cooked or baked coming out of the oven, but you have a pretty good idea on how that's going to go. Trying to have something where you're creating this process from scratch and potentially getting yourself confused along the way, that's where a lot of times this inundation of more gets in the way.
And I think it also becomes a question of when we have those ingredients set up, we know which pieces we need. We know that when we're making a banana bread, if I forget the bananas or I forget the flour or the chocolate chips or the sugar or any of these other items, it's likely not going to turn into what I want it to turn into as a final product. That's going to be the same with these small conversations. If I forget my major point, the reason that I feel the way I do, some of those overarching details and evidence as to why I'm telling you what I'm telling you in this short 3 to 5 minutes, likelihood is that's why we're going to miss the mark. So understanding what the major pieces are to that quote unquote recipe-based approach is also going to help ensure that your audience is getting all of the major takeaways they need, either to act on whatever it may be that you're asking them to act on, or retain the story, information, or whatever it is you've just told them.
On that note, if you find and you start to hear yourself rambling, I've already talked about this. I don't really know where I'm going. Stop. Just stop talking. Take a pause. Whether it's a pause for you to gather your thoughts and figure out, okay, what point am I trying to make? Or perhaps it's a pause and then you throw a question back at the person or group you're speaking to. Let them say something. But if all you do is hear yourself talk, at a certain point, that's probably a good indication that you're going too long, especially if you're thinking about this. If it's not, you're not a conference speaker where you're supposed to be up there speaking for an hour straight. If it's more of your conversations, casual conversations, meetings, there should be an element of everybody taking a turn at a certain point. So if you find that it's been a minute and nobody else has had the opportunity or has said anything, that's a good place for you to tell yourself, okay, let me take a quick break here, ask somebody else a question, or give somebody else an opportunity to share before I just keep going for the sake of saying, I think they're really loving this, because chances are they might not be loving it.
Yeah, silence is that big piece that allows the audience not only to take in what it is you just said, but actually decide whether or not they want to add something. If we don't give them that 2 or 3 seconds, they're never going to have any clue if they have something to add. And when they finally know they've got something to add, it was probably 2 or 3 minutes prior, and they're just remembering now. So again, we've stolen that thunder. We've taken their ability to go through that information. The big thing with pauses and the big thing with silence is your audience doesn't hear them. Unlike non-words, unlike filler statements, unlike that fluff. Silence is there and you notice it, but your audience doesn't hear anything. And that's going to be more of a positive to that format of conversation than anything else.
Agreed. So on that
Yeah.
note, we talked about some of the things that don't go well. For our listeners, what do you recommend doing to practice being more clear and concise?
Yeah, I'll take it first, Jen. If you're doing something that's virtual, which many of us are in today's world where we're on Teams or WebEx or Zoom meetings all day long, I like the use of sticky notes. If you know you've got a meeting, create a sticky note that's got one or two key points. And then you can always make more sticky notes that have supporting points. But this way, you know a meeting, visually, you get to reconnect to your talking points. Even if your audience sees you glancing, take a pause, as we coach you to do in our virtual courses. Take a pause, reconnect, and glance at it. But this is going to help keep you on task. But a wandering mind is what generally leads to rambling. And in meetings, especially those that we have back to back to back piled up, we don't really have the flexibility to allow a 30-minute calendar meeting to go 42 minutes long. Someone's going to just hang up, or they're going to say, John, I got to stop you there. I have another call I have to jump on. And at that point, they've not really gotten much out of your message because they've asked you to stop in the middle of whatever it is that you're sharing. So that's one tactic or technique. I know we talk a lot in our programs about practicing things out loud. We can run through or rehearse content in our minds every which way, but it doesn't exactly give us the opportunity to get that wordsmithing done, perhaps manage words, phrases, sentences that get us to either trip over or stumble through certain parts of it, where again, good indication that you might be rambling, or perhaps using, like we talked about earlier, jargon, technical language, industry content that might not be appropriate or applicable for the audience you're interacting with. So I'd say those are two relatively easy ways that most of our listeners can apply things immediately in the settings that we find ourselves in most frequently nowadays, anyways.
Another one I have is the use of recording yourself. So we use in our sessions a company called Yoodly, and it's an AI platform that you can go on, record yourself, or we record our participants in the session. That way you get to hear it back. So you're evaluating yourself. But the other really great thing about the Yoodly tool is that it has an entire section of AI generated feedback on where you have the opportunity to be more concise. Where you've rambled, where you've added more than necessary or created or caused confusion. So that's another great thing. Not only can you listen to it back and say, okay, I added way more detail than I needed to there, or I was confused with what I was saying and I was the one who just said it, but you can also go into that specific analytic through the Yoodly platform and it will give you suggestions on where I can tighten things up, stay more on message, cut any fluff that might be there. So another great option in terms of a next step or a practice item. And then I always have one more. I love the use of AI through the lens of taking your ideas and then enhancing them. And I know I've talked about this multiple times. Let's say you are writing social posts. You just put together an email for a client or customer, taking that message and then opening up ChatGPT or whatever other source you can use, put your information in there and then say, enhance this, make this more concise. What doesn't need to be here? But getting some of that generated feedback back to you, and then you get to decide between the two versions, what do you like from each paragraph or section? Maybe you're not changing everything. But maybe you say, oh, wow, the way that was written, so much better than what I had. And that's exactly what I'm trying to say. And they were able to do it in two sentences versus the seven that it took me. So, using the tools that are out there, again, it's not a replacement for your own ideas and thoughts and meetings and content, but it's taking what I'm trying to say and then asking something else, is there an easier way for me to say that?
Yeah. And in the workplace, something I always like to do is talk to somebody else about it. Somebody that knows the idea, somebody that knows that topic, somebody that's heard it before. Because oftentimes when I'm going through and compiling these messages, even if it is only 3 to 5 minutes, or maybe it's something a bit longer, I know that I'll get to a point where I'm fatigued with the talk track. Everything sounds the same. I'm not sure where I'm going, what to cut out, what to add in, if it's too much, if I've checked all the boxes. So, what I like to do is, and again, we can use Yoodly for this. I can use John and Jen, any of our managers, people that sit right behind us at our desks or at our cubicles. Again, we can ask them, hey, have I added too much here? As somebody that knows the topic, that knows the context, that knows the client, do you think I should take anything out? Do you think they need more information? Do you think this is good to go? A second set of eyes that understands that situation is always going to be a good way to say, all right, you agree. Okay. If not, they don't agree. We can gauge their feedback and say, do I want to take any of this into consideration or do I not necessarily agree? Like we always say with feedback, it is under our own volition and we have agency in if and how we take it. Therefore, allowing that person is never going to be a negative piece unless we allow them to force that feedback, which won't necessarily happen.
Yeah, so when we think about our key takeaways from staying concise and on message, try and understand who your audience is, know who you're going to be speaking to. Again, some of these social settings that we touched on at the beginning, you might not necessarily know who you're going to run into. And in those cases, stay high level. Don't get into the weeds until they have asked you because of their interest to go deeper. Second, from there, understand what you're trying to share. So think about it through the lens of what is my one key message? What is it that I want to get across? And then focus on that piece and then build out a little extra detail from there, based on what you think that audience might need. Try to take out any fluff, any excess, whether that's in the written communication, whether that's some of those phrases that we might use or filler words that we throw in. And then finally, practice. Practice is one of the biggest ways that you can apply these techniques and really start to fine-tune them. So whether it's, again, practicing on your written side with some of those AI recommendations or other feedback from people that know your role or your topic, practice by recording yourself, practice by finding a framework or a format and plugging in some casual information and some work topics into that and just saying it out loud to yourself. But the more you put your hands around this and focus on being concise, the easier that will start to be as a baseline rather than rambling to start and then trying to find that conciseness 45 minutes in. As always, if there's another topic you would like to hear us talk about, please respond directly to our email in the newsletter, and we will be sure to get that into the rotation for next year. Otherwise, we'll look forward to having you join us in 2026.
Thanks for listening to the Speak As Well As You Think podcast brought to you by Vautier Communications. Again, I am your host, Jen Alex. Vautier Communications is in the business of business communication skills. We coach and train both individuals and groups on how to elevate their presence and increase their impact through the way they communicate, present, and write. If you want to learn more about our in-person or virtual training options, visit our website at www.vautiercommunications.com. Thanks for listening.